Hey, I'm David Bitterman. If we've never met before, I'm a lawyer, and I've been doing this for a while. I started practicing when the latest tool was an IBM Selectric typewriter, if you all know what that is.
I'm Jasmine Wetherell. I'm also a lawyer, but I'm a millennial who made the mistake of starting my practice in 2012, right after the Great Recession.
And together, we're proud to host the Persuasion Occasion. It's a multi-generational look at advocacy and negotiation. Do I have this right, Jasmine? Millennials are accustomed to having a voice and seat at the table, and they're an optimistic group who loves social media and want their job and encounters to have meaning?
Well, David, I'll admit there's some truth in there. But what about baby boomers? They're known for their strong work ethic and often define themselves by their professional accomplishments. Is that true, David?
Jasmine, I have no idea. I'm too old to categorize those people, including myself. But let's talk about the show. We're going to look at persuasion from all dimensions. Our guests are going to include
super lawyers, skilled negotiators, jury consultants, behavioral scientists, mind readers, and other experts, all talking about how to be an effective advocate.
And we're really excited about working together.
Maybe you more than I, David.
All right, but let's dive in.
Welcome to the Persuasion Occasion podcast. Me and my co-host David Bitterman are very excited today to have on our show AJ and Johnny, who created a wildly acclaimed podcast, The Art of Charm, which they started mainly due to a challenge they found themselves in during college, which was the need to build better social connections. The Art of Charm, which has been going for nearly 20 years now, has reached around 250 million downloads, and they now provide coaching as well. Johnny, AJ, welcome to the podcast. And if you could, let's dive in and have you tell us a little bit about your background.
Thank you, Jasmine and David. It is a pleasure for us to be here today. For myself, I got into this topic. I was managing a bar, working in the music industry in North Carolina. And I was getting into my later 20s, and I started to get bored and feeling stuck in my career and everything that was going on. And I started to feel that days were starting to blur together and that I was letting the days escape me. And I wanted to get more out of life and what I was doing and find a way to enjoy my job much more. And this is all at the same time of a lot of this technology that we're using today was just getting popular and being widely used. I remember one night after my shift thinking about that we now have all of this world's knowledge at our fingertips. And I'm over here looking at cat videos and stupid stuff. And I was like, you know, I need to start using this to enhance my life. Since my job is dealing with people all day and every day as a bartender, talent buyer, and club manager, I took an interest in psychology and leveraging human connection in my field. And what I would do is I would start to research topics and concepts that I felt would help make my job more interesting and just make it more fun. And I would apply those concepts to my bartending shifts. And I would measure their effectiveness in my tips every night. And I would run these concepts usually about 2 to 3 weeks until those concepts became ingrained and habitualized. And once I recognized that I was running these concepts and it become habitualized, then I would check out, look at its effectiveness, how it showed up in my tips, and then would move on to the next concept. And I started small at first with just presentation, things like smiling and being a more smiley person. I remember at the end of my shifts, my cheeks hurting from just being overly smiley, but also being conscious of it. Now, as we all know, a lot of our behaviors after they're habitualized become unconscious. So we don't even think about them. So, and looking at persuasion, connection, interpersonal relationships, I'd started having so much fun at work. I saw the money that I was making increasing. And of course, I was being offered other jobs, other music opportunities, and just deeper connections with everyone that was coming into the bar. It was as if I was living a new life. And so that led into my fascination of getting more involved in these concepts, and then, of course, getting them out to the world.
Wow. I love that. The tip says the empirical data.
That's good. Yeah. We gotta talk about running a bar sometime later on, but that's another story.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, growing up, I was always introverted and found that I made friends through shared activities easiest. And I had a decent friend group in undergrad, and I decided to go to graduate school. And in going to graduate school, a lot of my community in Ann Arbor, the University of Michigan, had moved away to take jobs at Wall Street and in Silicon Valley. And I was basically starting over in graduate school, trying to build a social circle. And this is really where I found my introversion got in the way of that success and finding that new community. A lot of my fellow graduate students in the cancer biology field, they came to graduate school having highly acclaimed credentials, being published authors, as well as a lot of them already having a family and really just focused on research. And I found myself very flat-footed when it came to social dynamics, understanding how to meet and connect with people. And due to that, I found myself really struggling in my work inside of the lab, and my confidence started to take a real hit. And it then impacted my dating life. It impacted my work in graduate school. And I'm, much like Johnny, I went online to find answers to these problems and figure out some strategies to help me overcome this hurdle of introversion. And in large part, found some experts online, decided to hit record on a podcast over 17 years ago, and that grew in popularity and led to us teaching a lot of these concepts to our clients, who range from individuals to companies to military, around how do we actually influence people, how do we grow our social capital, as we call it, and build deep relationships in the social realm, romantic realm, and then as well in the professional area.
Well, this fits right into our theme, persuasion, and it's supposed to be from two different generations, so Jasmine will have a different perspective. But can you, other than smiling, what are some other things that we need to think about to be persuasive or liked?
One of the biggest pieces to that is, as human beings, we're all emotional. In fact, we're overly emotional, and we make all of our decisions from an emotional state. And when we feel good, we're at ease. When we don't, we're blocked. We cover up. We constrict those pathways to connection. And so persuasion is all about allowing people to feel good about the decisions that they are making and the connections that they have with you. As we brought up smiling earlier, I remember going to work in my first week of just an overly exaggerated smile and just being more smiley. I mentioned my cheeks were hurting, so I know that this was something that I was doing new compared to how I was. And a few days into that, my coworkers and friends of the bar were like, what's up with you lately? Why? You just seem happier and more excited, and you're more pleasant. And I had a reputation of being aloof, conceited, stuck up. And it wasn't due to how I interacted with people. It was just the sense that they got from me from the presentation of how I was showing up. And so something as small as smiling can change that presentation, change how people feel about you, and then open up those lines of communication for better connection. And of course, if those lines of communication are opened up to better connection, they're also opened up to influence and persuasion.
Yeah, much like Johnny, I found that originally I wanted to find out, what are the magic words? What are the magic phrases? What do I need to be saying in order to be more influential, persuasive, and likable? And of course, being an introvert, I was hoping that there were magic phrases or magic things that I could just do that would instantly change someone's perspective of me. But as I went down the research realm and looking at the psychology around influence and persuasion, I realized that it's far more than just the words that we use. It's nonverbal communication. It's also the beliefs and mindsets we have about ourselves and others that can increase or decrease our ability to be influential and persuasive. And that's in large part what started our own personal journey and then created an opportunity through the podcast and all the amazing guests we've had on to learn this skill set and then teach and share the skill set with others. And a big part of that also is what is being shared with you. So oftentimes we find with clients who are like myself, a little introverted, maybe shy or anxious in some settings where we want to be influential or persuasive, we tend to turn inward with our nonverbal communication as well as with our thoughts and our mind. We get focused on what we're doing, what we are saying, how other people are perceiving us. And when we actually turn inward, we start to become less persuasive, less influential, and the other person may find themselves, as Johnny was experiencing, as being less likable. Because a lot of what's going on with our mindsets and our beliefs internally and the doubt that we might be feeling then manifest in our nonverbal and verbal communication. So a big step that we take with all of our clients first is to look at what are your beliefs about yourself, your persuasion and influence currently? And are those beliefs in line with you actually becoming influential and persuasive? If you have some self-doubt or some self-criticism from the past, maybe someone told you growing up that you weren't influential or persuasive or you weren't likable, if you're holding on to that belief about yourself, it doesn't matter the words that you're saying and it doesn't matter the nonverbal communication tips you've picked up from the podcast, we need to shift that belief first because that is the genesis of all of our communication.
And how do you shift that? Just curious. I mean, do you have to relearn, reinvent yourself? How do you do it?
A big part of this is recognizing our core values. So when we are focused on how the world perceives us, that's extrinsic. Ah. So that's outside of us versus intrinsic. So who do you want to become? What do you value? What do you hold near and dear to your heart? Is it being honest? Is it being loyal? Is it being a leader? Is it being competitive? When you actually start to understand your core values, then you can start to shift your beliefs to fit the identity that you want. So a lot of times our beliefs have created this identity about ourselves. And these beliefs can come from outsiders, as I was sharing, might be parents, might be a sibling. It could be someone we went to school with. It could be someone who influenced us as a teacher or a professor. And once we start to build that narrative around this belief about ourselves, then it can become very difficult for us to have effective communication. So once we recognize that maybe we have a belief about ourselves that we're not interesting, we're not likable, we're not influential, well, we have to take a step back and look at, well, what are those core values? Who do we want to be on a day-to-day basis? And how do we start to build a narrative around ourselves that fits those core values? Well, we start to do that by taking action on those core values on a daily basis. As we start to actualize those core values in our behaviors, we start to shift our identity. And with that shifting of our identity, we can start to form and create new beliefs about ourselves and the world around us.
Well, that's complicated. Does it require a lot of work? I mean, in terms of just, you know, self-discipline and things like that? Or can you just like do a switch where it happens?
I would love to say that it was just a switch that we could magically flip. I think we would all love the persuasion and influence switch. but unfortunately, a lot of times these beliefs have been built over time. And they have, as Johnny has said, they've become habituated in our behaviors and actions in certain environments. And I know for myself, I had habituated being smaller, being inward, being diminutive in my lab environment at work. Because one of my first lab presentations in graduate school, I got some very harsh, negative, critical feedback. And with that, I started to build this belief about myself that I wasn't worthy, that other people didn't care about my results and what I had to say. And over time, showing up in those lab meetings, I became quieter and more introverted and less likely to share my thoughts and feelings. Now, of course, in that environment, other people seeing me in that day in and day out are going to start to build their own beliefs about me. So we not only have our own beliefs about ourselves, we have the beliefs that others are building about us through those experiences. So as Johnny said, he started smiling. And after about a week, his coworkers started to see something different. They started responding to Johnny differently, maybe mirroring back a smile, maybe asking him instead of shying away from him. So that's how our beliefs start to form beliefs around us with the people that we're interacting with in our environment. So in order to shift those beliefs, we have to start working from our core values, taking actions on a daily basis to shift how we're showing up in those environments. And over time, we're going to start to see that shift in the way people respond to us, communicate back to us, and that's going to further strengthen that frame and that identity about ourselves. Now, it doesn't have to take years. But over a series of weeks and months of you showing up in this environment and starting to shift your behavior, you're going to start to feel different in the way people respond to you. And it's going to start to shift your identity to one that is more persuasive and influential.
I just want to add to that as well. When you show up in a new way and you start behaving in a new way, maybe you're asking better questions, maybe you show up with a smile and people haven't seen that from you before, there is an instant feedback loop in how people respond to you. So when you get that positive feedback, it's very easy then to get excited to go, I'm moving in the right direction. So I'm going to continue to follow this path until I get to my desired destination. And as AJ says, depending on what that is, as long as you take some conscious effort and energy to put towards this a little bit every day, you're going to see those results. I myself have no problem going into the gym 6 days a week for an hour, regardless of how I might feel every morning, because I know the results are going to make up for that. And I'm going to feel better and operate better. When you have that feedback and people see a different version of you and they respond to you differently and you become more likable, you become more persuasive, people start chasing you rather than you chasing them, all of a sudden it makes all of the work that you're going to do easy because every day gets easier.
So I did want to pick up on something AJ said. You mentioned becoming more extrinsic rather than intrinsic, but then you also said there's not magic words or phrases you can say to someone to kind of flip this switch. So what are the extrinsic behaviors that we can do to become more charming, to become more persuasive?
I think a big part, as I was sharing earlier, around turning inward is we often miss out on the signals and the responses and the communication that others are sharing with us and around us. So a big part of this is actually becoming a better listener and recognizing that in our communication, it's not just about our own behaviors and actions, but it's about the response in others. And can we start to build connections through those conversations by picking up on the signals that the other person is sharing? And a lot of our work is based on the work of Dr. John Gottman, who coined a term, emotional bids. Now, these are moments in the interaction where the other party is sharing an opportunity for connection. And as we work with our clients and students, those emotional bids can happen nonverbally or verbally in conversation. So the more in tune you are with the extrinsic, what other people are sharing around you, and the less you're focused on your internal dialogue and what you would like to share, how you would like to appear, you can start to recognize and respond to those emotional bids. And Dr. Gottman calls that turn towards those emotional bids. Now, his seminal work is in romantic relationships and longevity, so couples that have been together 40, 50 plus years. But all social ties and connections are about us being emotionally validated and feeling emotionally safe with the other person. So in order to be more influential and persuasive, we have to pick up on these emotional cues in conversation, recognize them, and validate those around us in order for them, as Johnny was sharing earlier, to feel comfortable and safe to continue communicating with us and building and fostering that relationship. So as we talk about communication, I think a lot of times we get, as I was saying earlier, so focused on what we're doing that we miss the other part of the equation, which is the other person, how they're experiencing us, what they're feeling, what they're thinking, and what emotions they're sharing with us in these emotional bids.
There's a common refrain that is used in improv, and we've taken it to heart and use it in our classes, which is the answers are always in the other person. So about being present and listening, but also learning what to listen for so that you can respond to those emotional bids. You can think of our lines of communication between each other, either opening or closing. The more those bids that I'm in tune with and identify and validate, the larger the lines of communication open up. When I turn away or I miss those bids, those lines of communication will constrict, and I'm not going to get as many of those bids in the past. In fact, if I miss a lot of them, people are going to not think that I'm emotionally available or able to validate their feelings. So they're going to refuse to give those bids or just do it much less. They might even be afraid. This is why those lines of communication must stay open. And what John Gottman also recognized, that if those bids are turned away from, they're not validated, and those lines close up, soon resentment will set in from the other person because they're not feeling that they are seen and heard.
Yeah, so humor is an emotional bid that many of us will experience early on when interacting with someone. And if you have shared laughter, if you recognize that the other person is hoping to make you laugh, is putting effort and energy in sharing that humor with you, then that is a bid for connection around shared laughter, which is why we go to comedy shows together. Very rarely will you sit at home watching comedy alone. We do it in a community environment because it fosters and creates connection. So that's a very simple one that we'll see oftentimes when meeting someone for the first time or those initial stages of an interaction. But an emotional bid can be holding hands. It can be shaking hands. It can be hugging. It can be physical touch. Emotional bid can also be them asking more about you. So we were sharing earlier, you know, what'd you have for breakfast, Jasmine? Well, these sorts of questions where we're asking something of the other person, we're showcasing interest in the other person, they're important moments in fostering and building that connection.
Well, another aspect to this is in how you're going to respond to them, and they need validated. So everybody here has been in the argument with their significant other where they said, you're not listening to me, yet you can repeat everything that they said. It was because the bid for connection was validated wrongly. So for instance, a lot of our clients are analytical thinkers, and they come from analytical fields. They're programmers, they're engineers. When you have an analytical mind, you're basically focused on problem solution oriented mindset, and that mindset will allow you to be a great engineer. It'll allow you to be a great coder. It allows you to build many great things, but it also focuses on where weak points are, what is broken, what needs fixed. So if Jasmine gives me a bid about something that happened at work and I'm in an analytical mindset, I'm going to answer her and how to fix it. And Jasmine is going to look at me like, you're not hearing me. You're not listening to what I'm saying, because all she wanted was empathy at that point. She wanted me to feel with her and share an emotional state rather than looking at it as a problem to be fixed. And in our workshops, we go through and go through all the emotional bids, learn about how to respond to them, how to recognize them, but also understand that you don't need to be perfect in it. You just need to be attentive. It's not about catching 100% of those bids. It's about catching a majority of those bids.
The workshop, how's it work? And do you have like films of people that are successful? And I'm just curious.
You know, much of what we're sharing in the workshop is around the initial conversation, small talk, moving into fostering and building relationships. So what we do in the classroom is we go through our conversation formula, which is a framework for starting a conversation. And then we break down what are the emotional bids that are shared from that framework. So the way we do that is through role play interaction with video. So we have coaches and clients interacting with each other on video, and then we play back, much like you watch on Monday Night Football, the game tape. And we play back the video first with no audio so we can focus on nonverbal communication and emotional bid cues. And then we play it back with audio so you can see how both work in tandem to really create those opportunities for deeper connection and conversation. And as Johnny was sharing, for a lot of our clients, that first time being filmed, we turn really inward. So it's an opportunity for us to really see what you do in high pressure, stressful situations. And then as we do more and more reps of this and more practice, it becomes a lot easier. You forget the camera is there. And then when you actually go out with us in the evening to try this with complete strangers, you recognize things much faster than when you first joined us because of the practice repetition and the ability to see yourself. So how you appear on film, both verbally and nonverbally, can be really eye-opening and helpful in terms of rapidly improving your communication.
Wow. So you have like field trips. Where do you go? Do you go like restaurants or?
Exactly. So we go out on the street. So originally this was out on Hollywood Boulevard here in Los Angeles, where you can imagine there's a lot of tourists, a lot of different cultures.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we also go out to dinner and at restaurants where there's opportunities for socialization. So both of those are opportunities for you to practice with complete strangers, these skills and concepts that we're talking about. Put a little pressure on yourself first in the classroom through video exercises, and then allow you to see all of this work out in the real world.
And this, the implementation is important because we're trying to habitualize these new behaviors. If I'm an analytical thinker, and that's the way I've been viewing the world, and I pick up a book on persuasion and influence or connection, and I read it, that doesn't mean that I have learned anything. I took in some information, but I'm not using it. And this was something that I recognized in my work when I was bartending. It's like, well, I can read all this stuff. If I'm not using it and seeing its effectiveness, well, I'm not really learning anything. And we're now in this world where we do have the world's information at our fingertips, but are you actually learning anything? Are you using it? How many people passively listen to this podcast? Now, we've been podcasting for quite some time, and we have been talking for close to 20 years with a lot of our listeners, and they tell us amazing stories. And I love hearing that. But what we love the most is, what are you using from these podcasts? What have you implemented in your life, and how did it change, and what were the results of that? That's where the fun is for AJ and I, because we know that these concepts are incredibly powerful, but you're not going to realize that or see the opportunities that they're going to create in your life if you're not using them.
Definitely. You know, we had another guest on this podcast who was the hostage negotiator at Waco. And he told us something very similar, actually, where he plays a game where he goes to bars and he tries to learn as much as possible about the other person while revealing as little possible about himself, which I don't know if that's part of this. But do you have things like that you could suggest? Like, what are the scenarios that people should put themselves in to practice these skills?
Well, I think that's the fun part about our job is right now, many of us are listening to this with AirPods in, and we walk around missing out on all of these opportunities to practice these skills, whether it's on the bus, the subway, with your Uber driver, with the bartender or the waiter or the barista. There's so many social opportunities around us. I know coming out of the pandemic, we've shied away from some of the socialization, but what we look for is, how do you put these skills into practice with complete strangers where the stakes are low? And it's an opportunity for you to really test out and, as Johnny said, habitualize the frameworks first. And then we can start to bring it into higher stakes situations like job interviews, networking events, or with friends, family, and coworkers, where we don't want to be making mistakes that can really negatively impact our reputation.
It's a silly story, an example of this. And this is something that AJ had brought up, and I totally forgot about this, but this just goes to show the power of these things when they're implemented. When we first moved to New York, we were moving there to get this company started, and there was all this new technology that we're now beginning to use and having a lot of fun with it all, and it was a brave new world for all of us. But one of those pieces were about getting into New York was to network and make as much noise as possible about what we were doing in order to get some eyeballs and ears to the podcast and the work that we were doing. And I remember we were in the elevator of a building in New York, Lower Manhattan, and struck up a conversation with a guy in the elevator who turned out to work for Axe body spray. And there was some, this is in 2008. And so there was some information exchanged about what we did and what he was doing. He's like, wow, that's really interesting. And a few weeks later, we had gotten a call about him wanting us to come to talk to the marketing department about the work that we were doing. And they had put together this Art of Charm, Axe Body Spray, thing for men in order to help them better connect with the opposite sex. And we were paid handsomely for that afternoon work. And none of that wouldn't have happened if we hadn't used these frameworks and emotional bids and struck up a conversation with this guy in the elevator. These are the opportunities that happen when you raise people's emotional state. You allow them to feel good. They're going to think about you. He left thinking, huh, you know, what an interesting interaction that I've had with those two. How can I work with those guys? I mean, the thought from that experience kept percolating until he figured out a way to do some work with us. And that was one of the first things that we had gotten paid for when we moved to New York. But it was like, it was so exciting to see those things transpire.
That's amazing. And so we got a segue. What are you guys doing for the military? That's really interesting that you guys do that.
Yeah. So, you know, about 7 years ago, we were approached by some special forces who were looking to leverage social capital in a stressful environment to persuade dignitaries, but then also to connect with intelligence assets abroad. And what they really enjoyed about our program was it created an opportunity to practice these skills in a live environment, as well as get direct feedback through the video work that we discussed earlier, where they could actually see themselves implementing the skills, see how it was going, and then iterate from there. And over the last 7 years, we've worked in numerous groups with them passing through, and they've become close friends of ours around how these skills translate into truly life and death situations where team members or themselves are in potentially fatal situations where trust is at an all-time high or could be at an all-time low if you make the wrong mistake. So for us, in large part, the work in them approaching us was around the value in how do we apply these skills in a way that we can get quick feedback, we can implement with absolute strangers, and we can do in environments where maybe there might be a lack of cultural overlap. And that created an opportunity for us both in person and then with our online training programs to help them leverage and grow their social capital, which is invaluable in the situations that they're in abroad.
Tell us a little bit about the multicultural thing where you've got a different culture. Since one of our guests was she was a body language person, and she was talking about how different cultures interpret different gestures different ways, and you have to be attuned to that. I'm just curious what you guys think about that.
With our work, again, one of the big takeaways for the military around the cultural differences is the concept of emotional bids and being able to really pick up on the signals and response to any mishaps or mistakes you make culturally. So can you save that interaction, and can you recognize when the other person is losing interest or gaining interest? And that is what we were talking about earlier, where we have to pick up on the signal coming at us, not be solely focused on the signal that we're sending to others. So what's been really interesting is watching them go and utilize these skills in building relationships where the backgrounds are completely different, but recognizing very early that the conversation is moving towards family. This person values their family a lot. So we need to understand that it is important to not only mention what we're doing with them, but how they will have an impact on their family's lives. Maybe their focus is career, and they're very concerned about sharing information that could damage their career. So when you actually recognize in conversation, not just the signals that you're sending, but the signals that the other person is sending back in response to you, you can start to pick up on those subtle cues and really understand someone's motivators and someone's values in a way that you can start to create relationships around. Now, authenticity is a big part of this. So we can't go in there and be inauthentic and say, I care about family too, or I care about my career, and not actually mean it. So we do need to find overlap. And sometimes that overlap might be with another team member coming in and supporting you and building that relationship. So you could think about it in a sales role or as an attorney where you're looking to get more information that could either help or hurt the case. Maybe your team member or your partner has those same values or those same motivators, and let's leverage that in communication and conversation and fostering that deeper relationship with the person that we're working with. So at a high level, it's understanding that there are those differences, but we're all humans. And we all, at a very base level, care a lot about our own safety, security, our family safety, security, and health. And if you can recognize that early in the conversation, that creates unique ways for you to build those relationships and build that trust and rapport quickly.
I want to zone in on this thing you said about authenticity, because I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I've definitely met people who I think have gone out and tried to read one of these how to make friends and influence people type books. And then they try to use it on you and it comes off very almost sleazy and manipulative. So how do you walk that line? How do you take these skills and come across authentic and nice and not creepy?
Well, it's about those habits need to be habitualized. They need to become a part of you. So if you go out and read one of these books and try to apply it, the behaviors are going to come off clunky, awkward, because it's not you. This is something that you are trying to implement. And so for us, it's about the repetition and the practice to have these ingrained. But not only that, because once it's habitualized and it becomes a part of you, you don't need to be, you don't have to put yourself in a conscious state to use it. You can be at your genuine self. So it makes it everything a lot smoother. And the feedback loop in our programs helps with that, so that you know that you're moving in the right direction and you can continue to apply it and to get better. But also, as AJ had mentioned earlier, when we first get with our clients, it's about where do you see yourself right now and what is the desired outcome that you would like to achieve? What are the actions and behaviors that somebody who is going to achieve that outcome are going to do, right? And then what is going to be your why you take these actions every day to become this person? That why is connected to your intrinsic core values, and those need to be defined.
And you don't change your core values. So what you're saying is you stick with your core values, but it's just a different way of expressing them or communicating them?
So core values are how you show up as your best on a daily basis. Core values can shift and change over time. So we're not saying that my core values in my 20s are the same as my core values in my 60s or 70s, but we're saying if you understand your intrinsic motivators, how you want to show up, how you want to be remembered, what's really important to you, and then your behaviors and actions align with those core values, you show up in an authentic manner. And it comes down to intent, right? So if we look at the dark side or the light side, the Jedis or the dark side, the skills can be used in both manners. But what is your intent behind the skills? Is your intent to take from someone? Is your intent to dupe someone? Is your intent to help someone? Is your intent to be cooperative and allow both of you to share in success? So intent matters when it comes to utilizing and sharing these skills. It can be fun in the beginning to dupe someone or to put yourself in a situation that is inauthentic to get something that you want, but over time, that's not fulfilling, it's not purposeful, and hopefully that's not one of your core values. So when we recognize what are our intrinsic motivators and what are our values that we can show up in day in and day out, whether we succeed or fail at our goals, and we recognize that being cooperative, helping others, being in service of others is the most effective and impactful way for both of you to grow, then with that intention, utilizing all these skills and frameworks and everything we've shared with you today, is going to be authentic, is going to create opportunity in your life, and is going to be that valuable social capital that you can use to open opportunities in all facets of your life.
I think a lot of people live at a very surface level as well. So when you do the work to understand what your core values are, define them, and what are the actions that you take to live into them, there is a lot of effort and investment put into those core values. then you begin to learn and understand how you move and act due to those core values in your daily actions, which then allows you to see them in other people. And now when I'm talking or interacting with people and I'm able to speak to them according to their core values, because I'm now having an understanding of what that is, people then begin to see that this person gets me. They understand me at a core level because we know what their motivators are, or at least we can guess and take, have a guesstimate of what those core values are. And when I speak to you accordingly to those core values, you might have an agreement with me. Wow, you really know me. Or because I was vulnerable enough to take a guess of what those core values might be, you're going, if I'm wrong, you will correct me and say, well, actually you're close, but it's more this way. Well, we're now speaking at a much deeper level to each other, at a vulnerable level. And with that comes trust. And again, that trust is only going to be there if those lines of communication have been opened up.
Our whole work is like meeting clients, trying to bring in new clients, doing this, and the other. I had this lunch in New York last week. I'm having this conversation. It's making me think of all the ways I screwed that lunch up. You know, I could have done better.
We've all been there.
I did need to ask my millennial question. You know, so I'm a millennial. Some people call us the anxious generation. And I have to imagine that anxiety is one of the number one roadblocks that you guys are dealing with when you're coaching people on how to be authentic, how to be charming. So what is your philosophy for how to deal with someone super anxious?
We certainly have noticed that. Just for reference, I'm a Gen Xer. AJ is the millennial. And it is something that we see, and we're seeing it more and more common. And there's a couple aspects of that. Number one, people need to understand that they cannot wear their anxiety as a badge of victimhood. They need to move beyond that and past that and put that away and evolve and develop themselves. Now, even when I was younger, I certainly used some of the things that people, a reputation I had as my own badge of courage, but eventually you recognize the limitations of those stories and you want more out of life and you have to shed that. So for a lot of people, when they use that anxiety as that badge, it's going to come with limitations. And when we discuss desired results that they would like in their life, and they say, well, I would love for that, but I do have this anxiety or I have these other issues that are going on. It's like, well, you can continue to do that, or we can begin the steps that it's going to take to that desired outcome. Are you interested in evolving? When we look at things philosophically speaking, and also in a religious context, everything is about developing yourself into who it is that you're going to become. What is the best version of yourself? If you are not doing that, it's a wasted life. And we all come from humble beginnings with our own victimhood of our own problems, our own issues that can stem from how we were raised, who we are, and the context there. But eventually we have to decide, I'm better than this, and I'm willing to evolve, and I am ready to shed these things. And anxiety, much like the badge of, well, I'm an introvert, so I don't do those things. Okay, well, do you want the prize at the end of this? Do you want to achieve your dreams, or do you want to continue to sit in your comfy box?
And while we're talking about anxiety, because we were talking before about other things, how about imposter syndrome? Is that like real? And is that okay to have, or is that something you should try to get rid of?
It's real, David.
Yeah, and it's actually something to strive for, ironically. And
oh,
this
really?
Is our view. Yeah. So as Johnny was saying earlier, when we allow our anxieties to dictate our behaviors, we end up playing small and we stay in our comfort zone and we can't grow. And I'm sure a lot of people listening to the show want to grow in their career, want to become better, want to become more influential and persuasive. So recognizing that anxiety builds up over time, the more you stay in your comfort zone, then what we can do to move beyond anxiety is to start to stretch our comfort zone. Now, if I were to teach you swimming, I wouldn't throw you into the deep end of the pool. I would walk out with you step by step in the water, maybe holding your hand until you got comfortable with the water temperature, and then slowly but surely move to deeper and deeper water. Same thing with social interactions. You know, how can you lower the stakes enough where you feel some tension and pressure, but it doesn't require any reputational damage in your career, to your social life, to who you are as a person? And can you put yourself in an environment that stretches your comfort zone a little bit more each and every day? Well, then over time, you're going to start to see that anxiety wane through exposure therapy. And we have a variety of exercises and activities that allow our clients to step outside of their comfort zone in a what feels like a high stakes way, where there's social pressure, but not in a way that actually has any lasting reputational damage to them. So one of these examples is to go to a busy intersection. Maybe you want to drive to another town completely and lay on the ground for 30 seconds and watch how people react to you. It sounds very stressful. It's going to feel very stressful in the moment, but there's no lasting reputational damage. And by going through that experience, you start to beat back that anxiety, start to defeat that anxiety, that inner critic that comes up. And you're going to find by stretching that comfort zone repeatedly that anxiety starts to wane and dissipate. Not to say that it ever goes away, but in a lower state of anxiety, we can actually perform and we can excel. Now, to your question around imposter syndrome is you being outside of your comfort zone. In order to feel as an imposter, you have to be way outside of your comfort zone. So I would argue it's important to stay outside of our comfort zone for growth. Recognize that feeling like an imposter is completely okay and normal. And everyone around you also feels very similarly. So the more you can share with others that you either trust, know, like, and value, maybe it's a confidant, maybe it's a mentor, maybe it's a classmate, that you're feeling this way and share that vulnerability, you're going to find that a lot of other people also feel this way. And it's perfectly okay to feel this way, but still perform, still act towards those core values as we talked about earlier. So if I know my core value is to be authentic, even if I'm feeling like an imposter, I can still show up on this podcast as authentic AJ and share with you my stories, my background, and answers to your questions, while internally feeling a bit like an imposter or feeling like maybe I don't belong to be in this room or in this situation or in this seat. Now, one thing that we share with all of our clients over time, it's important for you to self-reflect, because we want to keep the scales even. And sometimes if all we're collecting is negative data points, well, that imposter syndrome is going to get stronger. That inner critic is going to become the louder voice in the room. And we're not going to have anything to balance out the conversation. So start to put together a win list. What are all the victories that got you to that role, that got you to that position, that got you in that room? Was it getting into your dream college? Was it getting that internship and beating other people out? Was it actually getting that promotion? Was that a victory? Maybe it was just showing up yesterday when you were feeling anxious and wanted to stay in bed. Once you have that victory list, that win list that you've been recording and journaling about, in those moments of deep uncertainty or feeling like a true imposter, you can look back and reflect on how far you've come and all the victories you've had along the way as data and evidence that you do belong there, that you have done the work, that you have gone outside of your comfort zone and lived a purposeful life. It's not to say that those moments will ever disappear completely, but it is important to recognize that if you're in the game, if you're on the field, if you're in the arena, odds are there are going to be moments where you feel like an imposter. What do you have at your disposal in your back pocket to share with yourself when that inner critic gets really loud? That victory list, that win list can be a really powerful way for you to recognize that you do belong in that seat. You do belong in that role, and you can keep moving and acting purposefully towards your goals.
And certainly there needs to be a check of what the reality is of the situation. And there's going to be expectations put on you, your own expectations that you have about yourself and everything that comes with that, but also external expectations that you feel that other people are putting onto you. So for instance, if I'm going to go into a room and I'm going to be vulnerable in front of a certain number of people, we'll use 100 for easy math, I have to understand that I'm the one that's in the arena and I'm going to show the actions that I'm taking that I want to promote to that room. Now, there's only a small part of that 100, maybe 3%, who are doers as well, who are going to acknowledge that and salute me with that. Then there's going to be up to about 10% of those folks who are also going to participate because, hey, they see something going on and they want to help. These are other doers as well, but they don't want to take the lead. They're going to just participate. Well, we have now 90% of the room who are sitting in the seats. They are spectators. And as spectators are going to do, some are going to jeer, some are going to cheer, but they're not taking action. Can I logically put and invest into the audience and what they think is going on? I'm the one that has to perform. And the only people that I need to take into account are the people who are in the arena with me who are working on this project. And those are the people that I want to give value to. And when I give value, is it making them feel good? But also those are the people whose thoughts that I will take into consideration.
Yeah, I just want to follow up on that. So, I mean, what do you do if you're in a one-on-one situation and the person that you're talking to, it is not responsive? They're not engaging. They're dropping the emotional bids. They're not laughing at your jokes. You know, how do you get someone like that to respond? Or is it walk away and try someone else?
When it comes to vulnerability and we're trying to connect, we have to look at vulnerability like a cave. And so if I have one person that I'm walking towards that cave with, and we'll call that cave vulnerability, and they're not responsive, it's a possibility that they're afraid to walk into that cave. They're afraid to be vulnerable. And so it's like, Jasmine, you and I have met, we're walking up to the cave, and I said, this has been great, Jasmine. Now I need you to get in that cave and be vulnerable.
Right. Like, well, no,
what do you mean for me to go into that cave, right? However, if I said, well, listen, it's totally cool. I'm going to go in first. I'm going to shine the light around. I will be vulnerable. And now that I have walked in, I have shined the light. You are either now going to feel a little bit guilty, so you're going to want to contribute as well, right? Or is this going to take a little bit of time of you feeling safe that it is okay? But we are going to have to lead if we want somebody else to feel vulnerable. Now, the other part to your question, you mentioned perhaps that you've tried everything and they are just not going. You have to respect that not everybody is on the level that you are. This is what we tell all of our clients as well. You are going out of your way to invest in yourself to build skills. You are going out of your way to do this. That means that the rest of the world is not interested or willing to put in that effort to build these skills. They are stunted in their development. You can't expect people, everyone you meet, to be on your level without having an understanding about them. So it is having an appreciation that not everybody is going to be where you are, especially if you're taking your time to build these skills in yourself.
If you were to identify the guests that have most influenced the way you think and the way you guys advise others, who would you identify? Because you've had phenomenal people on your show.
Yeah, I would start with Adam Grant. So we've had him on the show numerous times and quite honestly found his work to be the most impactful, especially his book, Give and Take, around interpersonal relationships and how important it is to be a giver, an authentic, smart giver, not a people pleaser in your giving, and recognizing that giving ultimately creates the most opportunity in your life. And the principle that we talked about earlier, cooperativity, in the way you behave and the value that you hold in others is exactly that, is that smart giving aspect that Adam Grant talks about. So he's definitely one of the seminal guests we've had on the show that is phenomenal, and a lot of our work is grounded in. I think outside of that, I think for us, the Joe Navarro and his work around nonverbal communication, I know you had Abby Marino on the show. Again, a lot of the work that we do, both with our clients in the military, involves recognizing and understanding your own nonverbal communication, but then being able to read others' nonverbal communication and course correct your communication around that. Anyone come to mind for you, Johnny?
Well, certainly, you've mentioned some great guests. Jonah Berger is another one who comes to mind. He has done two great books in persuasion, and we had interviewed him for both. But the other part of who we get influenced by are our own clients when they are able to step out of their comfort zone and achieve things that they have never felt possible. One example of that is one of our clients. His name is Eric, and he came to us originally just, he knew that his social circle was shrinking and he wanted to get better with the opposite sex and be a bit more charming there, but also do some networking. Well, through his work with us, he has also started a new career path that is now, he's entrenched in his core values of sustainable and renewable energies and building projects. And he's been doing now from just having an interest to now doing talks on it, has started some blogging about it. He's been working with other people and now has found himself in position in Detroit, taking over some properties and doing some model houses with all of these renewable materials. And each week when he gets on the call, it's, I'm doing this new thing. I've never done it before. I'm terrified as all hell, but this has just been so fun. So I'm just going to barrel through it. And when I see stuff like that, I get energized about it. And of course have to look at my own life. I'm like, I need to step on it. Like it's incredibly inspiring to see people live into the person that they had in their mind. And it's difficult for people to look at who they are now, look at the person they would like to be, and go outside that comfort zone to take those steps to make that happen. And when we see that, it only empowers us to take greater risks, to do more.
Well, you guys are doing pretty well. So I don't think you need to be, I'm sure you feel empowered more, but I tell you, you guys are doing really, really well.
You know, just for my personal interest and for our listeners, if there's one little kind of practice tip you would give us, not necessarily go lay down in an intersection, is there something that you can recommend that we go out and do to try and get us out of our comfort zones?
Yeah, we call this our doorway drill. And it's a great way to anchor your first impression to when you enter a room. So if you can imagine entering a doorway, anytime you enter a doorway, do this three-step personal check. Number one, stand up tall. So we want to project, as you discussed with Abby Marino on your last podcast, the power pose. We want to project confidence with our body language by standing upright. Put a smile on your face and make eye contact as you enter the room with the people who are inside of that room. And this little anchor point in your daily life, if you make that when you enter the Starbucks, if you make that when you enter the conference room, you head around the office, you're gonna find that people start to perceive you differently in that first moment that they see you before you even interact with them. And it's gonna start to influence your first impression in a positive way and open up opportunities to conversation, to meet new people. And as Johnny shared that story on the elevator, we are standing there, looking our most confident, standing upright, smiling, making eye contact in the elevator. And next thing you know, we had a unique business opportunity in New York City, where most people right now, as I shared earlier, might be wearing AirPods, looking down, looking at their phone, being distracted, not wearing that smile. You'll find that this small action on a daily basis over time creates those opportunities for connection that we talked about on the episode.
every time I go out, I can't help but notice what I call walking zombies, right? Who are people who are in their subconscious state going through life and asleep at the wheel. And I only see that progressing in the wrong way. It is when we take steps to stay out of that state as much as possible, we're the ones living in the world. We're participating. We're at a conscious level deciding what things we are going to do to get us to our desired result. Everybody else are sleeping on that. They don't, their habits they have committed to and submitted to, and they're comfortable in their life. And they may complain about it, but they're not doing what it is going to take to make those changes. So the more that you can be aware of that and stay out of that phone, but also bring yourself into that conscious state to say hello to somebody, what we call mare walking, which is you were walking down the street. Maybe you're just going to your job. You're hitting the subway. You're going to Starbucks. Are you able to make other people smile or wave or acknowledge you on your way there? Right? When that happens, if I'm walking down the street, I see David and David sees me and we have a mutual nod in that moment. I have to understand that David and I have just connected consciously in the world at that level. When you take notice of that, you begin to see how many people are living outside of that and how many people are living inside that comfort zone, right? David, I could say he's now in the arena with me participating at that moment, at that time.
I hope to. What you were saying reminds me, because Jasmine does. I have the earpod, what do they call it? The earphones on too many times, because I love, as Jasmine does, I love country music. But I was listening to an interview with some guy. He was a black country music artist, and which is not as frequent as we'd like to see. But he got in a horrible motorcycle accident, literally ran into a truck and got broke, both legs broke, pelvis rebuilt, arms rebuilt. But the thing he said, I was dead. But then he said when he woke up, the first thing he did is he checked his Instagram because he wanted to see whether he left something positive. Because he says, you never know when you're going to go and you want to leave something positive going there, which I thought was so cool and so similar to what you guys are talking about. So anyway, thank you so much. We have so much respect for you and watch you from afar from so long. So we got to thank Eric Montgomery, give him a credit for bringing us together. So thank you so much for doing this.
Yeah, this was great, guys. The striving for feeling imposter syndrome, I'm definitely going to be thinking about that. I'll tell myself that I'm achieving something every time I feel it.
Hey, that was a great show. Thanks for listening.
Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred listening platform.